Welcome to the show that takes you where others won't, out into the wilderness, the frontiers of new techniques and technologies and sales today, with your personal guide, the pilgrim on the 405, Mr. Will Crist.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks here on this kind of cloudy, sunny, foggy day here. I hear people calling this Laguna weather here Foggust. So welcome to our third show in Foggust of 2011. You know, sometimes driving up and down the 405, talking to people, you get on the phone and you wind up talking to people while you're on the 405 who may or may not be in California. And sometimes those conversations lead to great insights and good ideas that I want to share with people who are listening to Pilgrim Talks. And that happened this week with a fellow called Scott Metcalf. Scott is the chief strategist and CEO of a company in Chicago, of all places, in Chicago called Fetch Local Customers. And in the process of our conversation, we began talking about how in this marketplace, in this electronic environment, in this setting, companies, especially small to medium-sized companies, generate leads. How do they begin to go about getting leads in an effective way that doesn't suck up all of their professional salespeople's time? How do they generate effective leads that are going to close or have a reasonable probability of coming to a decision within the next 90 to 180 days? And finally, how do they get those leads qualified? How do they generate enough to keep salespeople busy? So as we began to talk about that, it just seemed very clear to me that these were conversations that I wanted to share with listeners to Pilgrim Talks, people here in Southern California. I know there's lots of people that want to talk about, I can help you generate leads, I can help you get to the top of the Google list, I can help you spice up your website, and all of that is talk until we see money coming into the till. So I want to introduce Scott Metcalf, the CEO and chief strategist of Fetch Local Customers in Chicago. So welcome to Pilgrim Talks, Scott.
Well, Will, thank you very much for having me. And it may be foggist out there, and it's not much different out here. It's hot and humid again today in Chicago. So it's good to be with you.
Oh, my goodness. Well, this fog is going to go away before the end of the day, and it'll be a nice moonlit night tonight, I'm almost convinced. So talk to me a little bit about what you do at Fetch Local Customers.
Okay. Well, the whole concept behind Fetch Local Customers is to really merge fundamental marketing strategies with the online and mobile world that we're living in today. And when we entered this market, that's something we just didn't see, and even today we don't see it. It seems as though the folks who live in the world of the web and the mobile web fall into one of two camps. They're either technologists who've got sucked in because of the technology piece and they think that's really cool, or they're people who come at it more from the design perspective. So they're graphic designers who through the years have now become web designers. And at the end of the day, well, as you know, it's not about the web and it's not about the mobile web. What it's about is marketing. And so approaching it as a marketing exercise first that just happens to leverage the power of the internet, whether that be wired or mobile, is the way we approach it. And I think it's probably the fundamental key to our success.
So talk to me a little bit more about what that means to approach it from a marketing perspective. I mean, as a sales trainer, I get a little antsy when I hear somebody talking about marketing.
Understood. And having worn the hats of both sales manager as well as marketing manager through the years, there should be those two should be joined at the hip, but it seems more often than not they're joined with hands to necks across the table, choking one another. So when I say from a marketing perspective, here's kind of the fundamental piece that most people really don't get, is that in order to generate leads effectively, and in this case we'll just talk about leads, off of the internet, you really have to understand who your target audience is, first and foremost, and who you want to go after. And then second, you have to conduct enough research to have a clear understanding as to how your customer thinks about you and what conversation goes on in their head when they sit down to conduct a search on one of the search engines to find your types of products and services. And let me just give you a couple quick examples. Every attorney that you talk to wants to consider themselves as an attorney or a barrister or an esquire because all that sounds really neat and cool. But the fact of the matter is, most Americans think about attorneys as lawyers. And so if you want to capture the greatest amount of traffic for one of your law clients, you have to make sure that you have a dominant presence on the word lawyer. In addition, of course, you go after attorney and some of the other things. But first and foremost, lawyer is far more frequently searched. So that's a marketing exercise to figure out that that's the case.
All right. So what I hear is to generate leads effectively, you have to, number one, understand who your market is, who your target prospects are, right?
Correct.
And then number two, you got to find out how these people conduct searches for problems that they have that we can solve.
That is correct.
Now, I can imagine a group of marketers sitting in a dark, smoke-filled room with a crystal ball, doing a lot of mind reading, assuming that they know that they can come up with nifty things that people use to conduct searches.
Yes, you can imagine that, and I'm sure it goes on, unfortunately.
Uh-huh.
But here's the beauty. Here's the beauty of the day and age that we live in. I mean, the one thing that everyone can agree on is that the Internet has leveled the playing field when it comes to access to knowledge. Right? It used to be knowledge was power, and there was a lot of friction surrounding knowledge and expertise. And the Internet has opened that up. It also has allowed companies such as Google and others to really aggregate a tremendous amount of data. And so we don't have to, as marketers, surmise or conjure up what we believe people are doing. We can get hard data that tells us how folks are expressing their needs and wants to relieve the pains in their lives via search. And so we don't have to guess anymore. We can get the numbers, and then we can refine those phrases through techniques to determine whether or not that's more of a, what I call a research search versus someone who's actually looking to buy. And so our philosophy is our clients are people who want to sell products and services. Therefore, the research should ultimately, at the end of that process, should drip out the most important buying phrases for our clients. And if we do that, and then we structure a site around that and content around that and calls to action around that, we have a pretty good system that allows us to convert people who are out there trying to scratch that itch into paying customers.
All right, so now I got a third thing that we have to do to generate leads effectively. One was to understand who the market was, identify our market. And that means to get into a niche, doesn't it? Get clear about what niche we want to work in.
We're big proponents of going after specific niches, whether they be from a geography perspective, whether they be from within a particular market vertical, whether they be within a vertical and within an area of expertise within that vertical. The more clear you can be and the more focused you can be with your marketing efforts, the greater the payoff and the return on investment.
Okay, so we got to understand who our market is, who our target prospects are, what our niche is. And then the second thing is how these people conduct searches for problems they have that we can solve. What are the buying phrases when they're searching for the kind of things that we do? And then thirdly, what I'm hearing is then you create content for the website, right?
Exactly. Only at that point, now you're starting to get into the fundamental pieces where you're actually working on the website and you're working on the content on that website.
Uh-huh.
To do it in the other order, which is how most folks approach it, which is let's create a website and let's hope that it gets traffic. Mm-hmm. It's just 180 degrees out of phase with how you have to approach it.
All right. So we understand our target market. We find out how the people in the target market search, what buying phrases they use. And now we're going to create the content that's going to match up to those buying phrases. Is that right? Is that what you said?
That is correct.
All right. Now, what happens when we do that?
You have to keep in mind that if you're talking about online lead generation, you really have to serve two customers or two masters, depending on how you want to look at it. The first customer is the human, is your true prospect who's out there, who's conducting the search to relieve this, whatever their pain is in their life that they're trying to get rid of. The second customer that you have to serve are the search engines themselves. So you have to make your content attractive not only to the human, but also to the algorithm that's out there ranking search engine pages, you know, day in and day out.
All right. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Since the human is the person who's actually going to buy, it's very important to have, and again, this is where you get back to the fundamentals of marketing and selling, make sure that your content, whether it be video content, written content, whatever the formatting is, MP3, that it's compelling, that it answers the question that's going on in their mind when they sat down to conduct that search. So I call that market-to-message match. So they're looking for something, and they happen upon your page, and it answers their question, gives them a call to action. They take that action, and now you've taken someone who was just out there in the ether, you've brought them in, you've captured them, you've turned them into a lead. But at the same time, you have to be able to serve the search engines and position your content and the components that make up a web page kind of behind the scenes so that your website is as attractive as it can be to the search engines. And when you do that, and you follow it up with the next step, which we'll talk to after I answer any questions about this, you have a system that produces results.
Okay. And results mean?
And results mean that traffic, visitors, come to the site and take your most desired action, whatever that most desired action is. It could be a phone call. It could be download a free report. It could be watch this video. It could be take a survey. That's driven primarily by the type of business and how that business owner or how that business organization likes to interact with their customer base.
Okay, so we design ways that visitors can take the most favorite action that we have in mind.
Correct.
All right, so what we got is, number one, who your market is, your target prospects, what niche you're in, those kinds of things that help us get the intention going. And then number two, we have to understand how these people in our niche conduct searches for problems they have that we can solve, what buying phrases they use. Now we create, then the third thing is create content for the website that will match up with those buying phrases. And you said what did you say it was, marketing to the match?
Market to message match. So the market has a need, and when they land in your site, the message that they receive matches essentially the conversation that was going on in their head when they sat down to solve that problem.
All right. And then number four is design ways that customers can take the most favored action that we have in mind.
That is correct.
All right. So we got four things. If we do these things, what can we...
If you do these things... And here's how, let me throw out a caveat. And you are in a search-driven market. And it's becoming more and more prevalent that virtually everything is a search-driven market, but not always the case. An example of something that's not a particularly good fit for search marketing is something that's new and unique just coming out onto the marketplace. And so people, the consumer, if you will, doesn't know about it. So how can they describe it and search for it to remove a pain that's in their lives, right? So very, very new products and very new services and very specialized things aren't a particularly good fit.
Mm-hmm.
But, professional services that, people buy and know how to buy and understand, services that surround the home, medical services, all those types of things are very much search-driven these days.
Mm-hmm.
What results can you expect? Well, you can expect that you will get more than your fair share of that audience, whatever that available audience is within the reach of your message, that you will get more than your fair share coming into your sales funnel and making contact with you, reaching out to you. And that's the beauty of search marketing, is that rather than the old days, back when I started selling 20-something years ago, we still did a lot of, dialing for dollars and driving around and stopping in and seeing people. And that tends to position you as a peddler. Whereas if someone finds you on the web and goes to your website and fills out a contact form or calls you, they're doing that because they now view you as the expert and they're reaching out to you. So from a positioning perspective, search leads are the highest quality you'll ever find.
Okay. So what we've really done is, ideally, we've taken the responsibility for generating sales accepted leads, we've taken that away from the salesperson, unless the salesperson is going to sit out there and start coding websites.
Correct. This search marketing is a great way. Here's how I position it for some folks who just have trouble with the technology and wrapping their heads around it. I describe it this way. How would you like to have an inside salesperson who works 24/7, didn't complain about having to work overtime, showed up on time every day, never asked for sick pay, didn't squabble over commissions, but just faithfully worked that inside sales job and delivered leads into your inbox or made your phone ring day in and day out? Would you like to have that employee?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, of course, always says, well, yeah, that sounds fantastic. Well, a properly developed online lead generation marketing system is that dream inside salesperson. Will it replace all other types of lead generation in your business? Probably not. But is it a very efficient and very cost-effective way to bring in a continual source of leads into your company that you can funnel to your salespeople who, quite frankly, get paid a lot more than this automated inside salesperson and so should be doing high-value work as opposed to low-value work? Yeah, absolutely.
So what we're doing is we are saying that another part of the organization is going to take responsibility for generating sales accepted leads for the salespeople in sufficient numbers to occupy the amount of time and energy and effort that they want to spend in selling.
That is correct.
All right. So, what does a salesperson need to do to participate in this project?
That's an excellent question. So from a sales perspective, in some cases, they need to reposition their whole paradigm because, again, folks will be calling them as opposed to them perhaps dialing for dollars. And so it's a little bit of a different conversation. And so understanding when that lead comes in, when that phone call, for example, comes in, how to receive that phone call, how to have the dialogue to quickly identify what the pain points are and to get them talking on the phone to more than likely having a face-to-face meeting. So qualifying them and getting them to sit down face-to-face so they can have the true selling discussion. because the website, unless you're selling some low-cost widget, is not going to sell your high-value product or service. Your salespeople still need to know how to sell. The difference is how that conversation gets started. From there on, it's a selling exercise. It's no longer a marketing exercise.
Now, traditional sales spend, in a traditional sales call, a traditional salesperson spends a lot of time explaining what their product does or what purpose their service serves. But as I understand it, here, by the time that person is ready to talk to a salesperson, they've already done research on the internet to know sometimes more than the salesperson.
It can quite often be the case. And here's where you can really get into some pretty powerful funnel systems. So you can go from as simple as they land on a web page, you have a call to action, and the person calls in. In that case, they may or may not be highly educated about your particular product or service. But you can also develop systems where they come in, and over the course of time, through email, through video, through taped webinars, that you can take them across what I call the buying continuum. From, geez, I think I have a problem, to, you know what, I do have a problem, to, how am I going to solve the problem, to, okay, these guys look pretty good, to, you know what, I better pick up the phone and buy. And that is possible through the web, all different levels of education. And that depends on what the organization wants to have happen and how they want to utilize the web. So from very basic stuff to some really sophisticated interaction with the prospect before a salesperson ever gets involved. So that's a great point.
Now, when that salesperson comes into a sales call today, predominantly after, today, it seems to me that most of the marketplace is much better informed about goods and services that people have than they were 10 years ago. So when they come into a sales call, don't they need a system that is something other than, I'm going to give you all the information I can, I'm going to tell you what I think the price is going to be, if I don't know it, I have to guess a little bit, or I'll tell you exactly the price, and then I'll try to close you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back to where, at the beginning of the show, we talked about, well, there's marketing and then there's selling. And the handoff between, and the difference between marketing and selling is that marketing typically is about dishing out information in order to generate interest in one's products or services. But the salesperson job still remains the same, that they have to follow an organized, systematic process to get people away from, hey, I'm giving you information, to turning the conversation around and asking questions to identify really what the pain points are, what type of budget, who's going to make the decision. I mean, all the classical stuff that's involved with really being an excellent salesperson, still, that will never be replaced by the internet. I'm sorry.
Well, sure, because the internet is primarily a place for information sharing. It's a place for conversations at the best, but it's not a place where people engage to solve problems.
That is correct. Especially, again, I go back to a lot of people, and let's face it, you probably bought stuff off of Amazon, right? So
sure.
You know people buy products and services off the web all the time, yeah. Billions of dollars worth.
Yeah.
The difference is that those typically are things that are easy to buy. The risk of that purchase is very low. It's a $10 book. It's a DVD you can send back if you don't like it. It's a pair of shoes from Zappos, right? All that stuff's easy to transact on the web. But if you are a specialty business owner, or you run a business where you have a high-value product or service that's difficult to understand, then you want to use the web not to sell your services, but to generate the interest to get people in front of your salespeople where they can do what they do best, which is ask questions, uncover needs, find out the pain points, and then close that business through, you know, classical selling techniques, you know, something as such as the Sandler system, which is, in my mind, still one of the best selling systems out there.
And so it what we're really talking about is training people to use a system that consistently will generate a decision in as quickly as possible, right?
Yeah,
helping
absolutely.
People understand their issues, understand what it costs them to not have solved these issues, find out what their budget is in terms of time, resources, and money, figure out, help them to discover what their decision-making process is, all before presenting the specific solution to the problem.
Absolutely.
And if we could have salespeople, our professional salespeople, spending the majority, if not 100% of their time working on the sales process from those sales accepted leads to decisions, we would be getting the maximum productivity from our salespeople, wouldn't we?
You better believe it.
Yeah. I want to come back. I want to stop on that for a moment because I want to explore that a little bit more. But I want to take a little time out to hear from our sponsor.
We'll be back with Will Chris and his guest right after this word from Sandler Training.
Hi, I'm Bob Barber with Sandler Training. I'm here to talk to you about rule number 6. Don't buy back tomorrow what you sold today. I was talking to a salesperson the other day, and he'd closed a big deal. Gone to the bank, cashed the check, the works. Unfortunately, he got a 4 o'clock in the morning phone call from a prospect saying, put a hold on things, something's come up. He'd had second thoughts. Second thoughts. Have you ever had second thoughts? Of course you have. It's human nature. It's usually right after you let your daughter stay out late on Friday night, or you order dessert or buy that new car. Did I make the right decision? It's only human nature. Traditional salespeople tend to rush through that process, hope that the person doesn't have their human nature natural reaction of second thoughts or buyer's remorse. They try to close the deal, pass that problem on to somebody else, get that contract processed. At Sandler, we help the prospect embrace that. Bring it up. Help them go through it. Work through that second thought, that buyer's remorse. It might sound something like, Jim, I'm looking forward to working with you. I think it's going to be fun. This accounting solution is what your company needs. Now, you were a little concerned that we couldn't get the conversion in place within 3 weeks. It's going to be more like 5. Are you going to be okay with that? Help that person work through it. What better way to reinforce the role of a trusted advisor than to help that person work through their buyer's remorse? Rule number 6, don't buy back tomorrow what you sold today.
And now back to Will Christ and his guest.
Well, we've been talking to Scott Metcalf of Fetch Local Customers. We've been talking about how to use a website to generate high-quality leads from the Internet. And we left off just before the break talking about what role salespeople play in this new process, this new marketplace, where before, Scott, right, people, you know, business owners said to salespeople, go out and generate as many leads as you can, put them through the sales process, give them a demo, show them a proposal, close them, and then, by the way, we'll take care of the fulfillment of the task, we'll get the product to them, but you go ahead and manage the account, right?
Yeah, they have to do it all, right? Isn't that what you want? You're mostly, you're high-paid, highly motivated salesperson. You want to You want to make sure you bog them down with everything, including all the admin.
Yes. Now, salespeople have some very unique skills. And those skills aren't necessarily good at account management. I mean, it's almost the difference between a hunter and a farmer.
Yeah, absolutely right. And in fact, as you probably are aware, there's a lot of folks who split up their sales teams along those lines. I've even worked with folks in the past where they have a hunter and a farmer, and they're paired up, and they go out and they make the sales calls together, so the relationship is started. But as soon as that customer signs on the dotted line, the hunter moves out of that account, and it's left to the farmer. You're right. I mean, it's a different skill set. And it's not that the farmer is a bad person. It's just that person has a different set of skills, both of which are valuable to the company and both of which are valuable to the prospect.
Well, the farmer is a bad person if you're trying to make him into a hunter.
Yes, I would totally agree with that. It's like the round peg in the square hole.
And when you're thinking about your accounts, we in our management program today, we were talking with folks, and we were talking about account management. And what we discovered by the end of the 3.5 hours that we spent was that every one of the companies in that management program had a gold mine that they hadn't been digging in regularly, which was their current accounts, which they had not created a plan to develop.
It's a shame, and I would certainly agree that through the years I've seen the same thing. We used to call it a heat map, right? You get someone in there, and you take a look. You have a new client, and you take a look at what are all the possible applications that we can provide for that person. And you begin to, if you go through account by account, what we typically have found in the past is that exercise yields far more potential business than the client ever thought was possible. They don't realize how much potential business is right underneath their noses. And I'm not exactly sure why that is, but I've seen it time and time again.
Yeah, well, because they're focused on this whole notion of the primary job of my salesperson is to sell, but oh, by the way, they also have to generate new leads. And then I'm expecting them to manage the account. Well, where does the salesperson get most of their money?
It depends on the commission structure, but it's going to be from closing new business.
Yeah, from closing new business. They don't get any money from generating a new lead, so that's going to be something that goes down the priority list. And they probably don't get as much from managing the account as they do in closing new business, so that's going to go down the priority list. And when that happens, the CEO and the company lose the, they lose it. They're not paying attention to some of their greatest assets.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that brings us back to how, the whole notion of generating leads. If a company, if a CEO or the C-level suite expects salespeople who are highly trained at closing business, getting people to make decisions, getting people to understand exactly what their problems are, what kind of budget they have. They have people who are masters at directing the conversation toward making a decision. If we expect them also to have the skill sets of generating new leads, of somehow magically knowing how to use the internet to generate new leads, and how to somehow keep those folks involved through a nurturing process that may or may not come to fruition today or tomorrow, I think they're losing the great value that they have in their salespeople, and they're also losing the opportunity to find people who know exactly how to generate all of those leads.
It's an excellent point. I mean, in the day and age of the web, okay, and using the web for lead generation, yeah, it's absurd to think that that's a salesperson's responsibility. It should be handed over to the experts, whether it's outsourced to a company like ours or whether there's an internal team that does that. But it's certainly not a sales function. It is a marketing function, and it it becomes a sales function when it becomes a viable lead that's handed over to them. Until that point, someone else's responsibility.
So let's talk a little bit about, we've talked a little bit about what salespeople need to do, and I think one thing that's really key is salespeople have the responsibility for that step number one in your process. Tell me who you want, what they look like, what they smell like, how they walk. If they look like a duck, I'll go get ducks for you, right?
Correct.
Tell me exactly what you want. Now, once I know what they want, and I, you know, through research, believe that there's enough people out there to bring into the conversation. Now it becomes somebody's job, and I really shy away from using marketing, because marketing for so long was more creative than it was productive.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said that, because this is something that's always fascinated me. Being a student of selling and a student of marketing for years, let's just kind of walk through the timeline of lead generation marketing. Just real quickly, and I wish I could show a visual of this, but if you go back to the 1850s, and this is something that you can do and the people in the audience can do. If you go to, for example, the Morton Salt site, okay, they have kind of their archives of marketing. And you can go back to the 1800s, and you can find direct response marketing ads that have a call to action and have essentially an opt-in form. Now, this is hundreds of years before the Internet was even around, but that's the way they generated leads, was through marketing. And that was great, and it worked well. And then something happened back in the 50s. This is now the 1950s. And that thing that happened was television. And so marketing went from being a direct response. I'm going to do something and get a call to action to happen. And it went from that to what I call a CNI, which is, you know, the creative piece and the impressions. You know, these are the Budweiser ads you see pounded into your head. And then all these consumer-driven items that you see on TV and hear on radio. And when that happened, it seems as though true marketing was lost. And the only thing that saved it, quite frankly, is the fact that nowadays, in the last 10 years, thanks to Google and the other search companies out there, people are beginning to realize that CNI stuff, that creative and the repetition, that isn't real marketing. Real marketing is direct response marketing, and that's what a good website and a good online marketing program will do. But it's not new. It's been around for hundreds of years. It was just ignored and forgotten by the business schools in the era of TV. So I'm glad you brought it up.
All right, so that's good to hear. The difference between marketing when television reigned and what you're calling true marketing now. So there's something different there that CEOs, C-level people can look for. They can now expect metrics from the marketing behaviors, right?
That is correct.
When somebody says, oh, I can get you a lot of connections on a lot of people coming to your website, I don't necessarily want people coming to my website. That's not my goal, is it? I don't need to have 500,000 people coming to my website. If I need 20 leads a week for my salespeople, 20 qualified leads that meet their criteria, if I need 20 a week, I don't care how many people come, do I?
No, you really don't. What you want are the 20 of the right people.
That's right. 20 qualified leads. Now, if I'm not getting 20 qualified leads, what do I do? If I'm not getting 25 qualified leads from my salespeople, what do I do?
What do you do? Well, you obviously need to go out there into the marketplace, into the target audience that you're trying to get, and you have to engage them in one way or the other.
Well, now, what I'm thinking, I'm thinking that I have assigned that to somebody. Somebody has taken that responsibility on. They may be an employee, it may be an outsourced vendor, but somebody has the responsibility, right?
Someone should. Unfortunately, even that is not always clear in organizations.
Well, I mean, who's going to do it? And if we say we're not going to ask our salespeople to do it, because, number one, they don't know what to do. They don't know how to do it. The old way of generating leads is not nearly as effective as it used to be. So you're going to be spending a lot of time trying to use methods that are, you know, that people have created defenses against. I mean,
exactly.
Making cold calls is extremely difficult if you're going to come across as a salesperson. So you got to really change a lot of things to make a cold call effective. And even then, you're going to make a lot of cold calls before you even have a conversation with somebody. So if we were able to do what you're saying, if we were able to use the tools of the internet to generate a sufficient quality of sales acceptable leads for our salespeople that would take up the majority of their time in closing, you know, closing mean helping people to make a decision, that means that we have assigned the responsibility for generating those leads to somebody else.
Yes.
And that's where we hold them accountable. The question is, if I need 20 qualified leads a month, or if I need 200 a month, or 3,000 a month, and this is the criteria, my question is, can you get those for me? Is that fair? Fair enough?
The answer is yes.
All right.
Yeah, the answer is yes.
All right.
I was going to say, the answer is yes, given given the availability, the sufficient availability of that target audience. I mean,
yeah.
If you have the understanding that that market is out there, mm-hmm. and let's talk about it again, making clear that for the purposes of the discussion we're having tonight, we're talking about, you know, search-driven
mm-hmm.
markets,
mm-hmm.
then absolutely you can pretty clearly define, not exactly, but you can get a pretty good feel as to how much traffic is out there, how many folks are looking for your products and services, and you can position yourself to get in front of those folks and capture that market share. There's the old saying, you got to shoot where the ducks are flying. We can have a pretty good idea of where the ducks are flying. Now, if you need 200 ducks, and you're only working in an area that has 20 ducks, well, you know, no one's a miracle worker. But if you need 200 ducks and you're in an area that has 2,000 ducks, well, by golly, you should be able to get 200 ducks.
Well, and that's the contract. That's the agreement that whoever is doing that new marketing, whoever is generating those, whoever accepts that responsibility, they will have done that research.
That is absolutely right. Well, you would hope so.
Well, I mean, that's what you that's what you would expect from a professional.
That's what you would expect from a professional.
All right. So the question is, this is what I want. Can you give it to me? And when somebody says, yes, I can, then I can monitor that and expect that I'm going to get it. And if I don't get it, I go back to them and say, tell me why. What's going on? How do we can you fix this, or do I need to find somebody else?
That is correct.
All right. Now, doesn't that change the whole marketing from this, I guess you're identifying with the television age, television and radio and this broadcast media? Doesn't that change the whole way we look at our marketing budget?
Absolutely. It becomes far easier to calculate return on investment for invested marketing dollar because you know the input of how much money you're spending, and you can track how many folks are coming to the site. You can track how many of those folks get turned into qualified leads. You can then track how many of those leads are turned into business. And it becomes a very nice, simple, math, if you will, or economics exercise. I mean, I approach everything because myself and my primary partner in our business, we're both engineers by training. And so everything's a process, and a process has inputs and a process has outputs, and you should be able to measure inputs and predict what outputs are going to happen. And with our process and with a process like ours that someone else might provide, if they, to your point, are true professionals and understand what they're doing, then yes, they can make some predictions, they can provide data, and they can make course corrections along the way to get the results that you're looking for.
And that is something that an owner of a business or C-level people have a right to expect from marketers today?
Absolutely. If that is not the, that is not how that conversation is framed, if it's not about results and facts and figures, then I would say don't walk away from that conversation, run away from that conversation.
Right. This is not about, we're going to get you to be the top of Google, and then you pay me for that, because that's our goal. That is merely a tactic.
That's an incomplete solution.
Yeah,
right. The classic formula, the overarching formula for success on the web is traffic times conversion. Okay, traffic times conversion is what leads to profits. So if someone's coming to you, or you're getting that call from the person from India, or they're sending you emails and they're telling you they're going to get you to the top of Google, that's just potentially, that's just part of the traffic piece. They haven't addressed conversion. They haven't done anything about doing the correct research to find out if there's a market to message match. They haven't helped create content in a professional manner that's going to bring people in and get them to take that most desired action. So is it cool to be able to tell your buddies at the country club, hey, look, I'm on the front page of Google, I'm number one? Well, yeah, that's kind of cool. But is it what you really need, which is results and new customers? Well, no, it's still quite a ways away from that, Will.
All right, so let's talk a little bit. Let's assume that we've got some CEOs and C-level people in the room. What should they be doing if they are saying, you know, I've heard about this internet thing, I've paid some people to dress up my site, it's got video on it now, it's got some forms on it, but I'm not getting anything. I don't, but I paid a lot of money for that, and I don't know if I want to spend any more money. I just don't trust it. What would we tell them?
Okay, there's a couple questions in there, but let's talk about the trust piece, right? And I like to tell a story around that. It's kind of like this. Will, have you ever eaten pizza before?
Oh, pizza all the time. My wife makes the best pizza in the world.
All right. Have you ever burned your mouth biting into a piece of pizza because you just couldn't wait?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, that hurt real bad. It was a very bad experience, right?
Yeah.
Do you still eat pizza?
Well, I'm afraid I do.
Okay. So the fact that someone may have been led astray by someone who either unwittingly didn't know what they were really doing, or worse yet, misrepresented the quality of their services, I can't help them, and other people who really know what's going on, they can't help that piece. But you just have to get over it, right? I mean, we've all made bad choices at like biting into a piece of pizza. But what they should be doing is challenging someone and asking the questions of, why isn't it working? Is it that it's not a search-driven market? Is it that they're not really at the top of the search engines? Is it they're at the top of the search engines for the wrong phrases? They're not buying phrases? Is it that when they come back to the site, they're dealt with some sort of hot mess as opposed to a targeted, cogent call to action and market to message match? There's moving parts that go between the web in its entirety, and generating qualified leads.
All right. So what would we offer to these decision makers who have some money to spend if they believe they're going to get a return on the money that they spend? How will they set that conversation up? I mean, I've been in the room when some of these marketers come in, and the marketers run the whole conversation. And at the end, it's merely, do you want to buy it or not? And I don't think that the decision makers have even begun to understand what's necessary. So how would these folks who are not technologists, who are not marketers, what would they be for? What kind of conversation should they be driving?
They should be driving a business conversation. It all comes down to they need to make money, right? That's the purpose. Most businesses are not charities. They're there to create a profit. And most CEOs or people that C-level suite understand how their business runs, what their profitability is, what their net operating income is, and they can begin to back calculate and figure out. They're probably the same exercises you do with your clients as to, you know, how do I build, if you ever use the term cookbook, right? How do I build from the front end of how many contacts I have in order to drive the profits that I'm forecasting for this year and next? In the business of utilizing the web, it's really just a tool to help you with that conversation. So don't get, my advice, don't get wrapped around the axle or scared with the technology, and don't let people come in with a bunch of foo-foo dust about, you know, marketing and things. Push them for metrics, help make sure that they understand how your business makes money and can show you a logical connection between what they're proposing from a lead generation perspective and how it's going to integrate into the organization, and help them help you walk through the numbers from the front end to the back end. Because in the end, it's a business discussion. It's not a technology, marketing, or even a selling discussion.
Right. This is produce. I guess maybe a manufacturer should be using his manufacturing hat. Show me how you're going to manufacture. Where are you going to generate these? What do we need to do to create these leads? That then we're going to hand over to this, you know, for some people, this mysterious box called selling.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Right. It's a business discussion.
And if my marketing is not generating the leads that I was promised, then I have a problem with the people who are doing the work.
That is correct.
It's not a problem with the economy. It's not a problem with my marketplace. It's a problem because my people haven't come up with the system for generating what they said they would do.
Absolutely. It's no different than anything else. We're all about pay for performance and understanding that it's the results that matter. And what we tell our clients is, you know, pretty straightforward. If at the end of the day, after some period of time, you are not seeing the return on your investment, you should, by all means, stop investing money with us and with, you know, this concept and move on to try something else.
Okay.
I mean, that's fair, right? And that's the way you probably run your business.
That's right. If it doesn't work, then let's find something different. Let's not give up. Let's be patient, but let's also be persistent, and let's be clear about what we're monitoring, what metrics we're using, and hold people accountable for what they said they would do.
Absolutely the case.
Now, is that something you're willing to do in your business?
Absolutely. The pieces of the puzzle that we can control, Will, are... we can control getting people to the site, that traffic piece. Remember that piece?
Uh-huh.
We can aid in the conversion piece, back to that conversation of what's the most desired action. And sometimes you know, depending upon the website, and you know, we're kind of website agnostic. Half our clients, we build websites for them. Half, we work with their existing technology. And so sometimes the conversion is challenging because of the parameters they have to work within. But we can help them on traffic. We can help them on conversion. At some point, it becomes the selling piece. And that's really where we turn. The selling goes back to someone like you, the expert in selling.
Absolutely.
So where we're willing to put our money where our mouth is that, yeah, we're willing to say we can get you onto the, you know, we can get you highly ranked in the search engines. We can produce traffic. We can help produce conversions, those most desired actions, those phone calls, those, you know, downloading of reports.
Yeah, to me, that's all under the hood stuff, right?
under the hood and for what context?
Well, I mean, I don't really care how you get the leads.
Exactly. Well, yes.
I mean, put me on Google, don't put me on Google. Give me a high ranking. What I'm looking at is, am I getting the leads for my people that are highly qualified, fit their definition of a sales accepted lead? Am I getting them in sufficient numbers, like I said, like you told me you would get me?
Absolutely.
All right. Now, that's fair enough. That the C-level people who are making decisions about this have a right to have that kind of agreement with their marketers.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the type of conversation they should be having.
All right, so let me ask. If somebody wanted to talk to you, how would they do that?
Okay, if someone wanted to talk to me, they would either go to the Fetch Local Customers website.
But so now, before they have to be in Chicago, right?
That is not the case. We are a nationwide company. Thank you very much. We service people all over the U.S.
Okay.
And, you know, someday probably around the world. But no, they do not have to be in the Midwest. They can be anywhere.
Okay.
But again, that's the beauty of the web, is that we can work anywhere and we can provide assistance to clients. So they can visit the website, which is www.fetchlocalcustomers.com.
Mm-hmm.
They can call us toll-free at 888-505-6162. Again, that's 888-505-6162. Or they can certainly email me at scott@fetchlocalcustomers.com. Any and all of those work to get our attention. We'll be more than happy to have a frank business discussion with them, at the end of which time, probably after 15, 20 minutes, we'll be able to come to a conclusion. One of two things: either, you know what we do just isn't a good fit for you, or you know what, perhaps, you know, it looks like there is a good fit, and we can then talk about what some next steps might be at that point.
Mm-hmm. And those next steps ultimately are going to lead to production.
Absolutely.
Right? Qualified leads generated.
Qualified leads generated. It's what it's all about.
Excellent. Scott, thank you so much for taking your time. I know what you guys do after dark in Chicago, and thanks for putting that off for a while so we can have a real good conversation here.
It's always a pleasure to have a business discussion with someone who's a true professional, so thank you for having me on tonight. It's been a pleasure.
Great. I look forward to talking with you again very soon.
Thank you so much, Will. Good night.
Good night. So there we are. You know, marketing changes. It's not how many awards a marketer has in its office. It's not how creative can they be. It is how many leads, qualified leads, can they generate? What are they doing? What's happening with the leads that are generated? What's the process? And are marketers taking the responsibility for generating the leads that they said they would in the quantity and the quality that they agreed to? You have a right to have that. That's what that's what Google, that's what the internet, that's what this is all about. If you have any questions, let's get on the radio and talk about it. This is the Pilgrim on the 405, wishing you all the opportunities in the world, finding the best leads that you can find with the greatest salespeople, and following that up with great customer support and account management. Take care. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the one and only show that takes you out into the frontiers of technology today. It's the Pilgrim on the 405, your own personal guide to the new world of sales and sales technologies. Every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific time here on Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.